Hey everybody, on this week's episode, Grayson and I talk about goal setting and some things coming up for the new year and how to approach some of the ways you set your goals. And we also delve a little bit into what would happen if we had telepathic thoughts as a society. Hope you all enjoy it. All right, everybody, welcome back. Episode 19 of the Strength Academy podcast. Ooh. Grayson here with Mundo.
Hey, y'all, what's up?
All right, guys. Well, we're coming up to the end of the year, and we've been thinking a lot about... we wanted to talk a little bit about New Year's resolutions and goal setting, and I think the best place to start is just kind of talking about general feelings about the New Year's resolution itself. I have kind of mixed feelings about it. I feel like, I don't remember the exact statistics, but the majority of times people set a New Year's resolution of, I'm going to lose X number of pounds or get into this new thing or write a book this year, or whatever it may be. Statistically, those fail a majority of the time. So what I kind of want to talk about today is how do we set goals that are less likely to fall through the cracks? Because, I mean, I'm sure you've seen just tons and tons and done it yourself, I'm sure, because I have. Like, oh, I'm going to change this thing. And starting off with, you know, what kind of goals are people usually setting, right?
Right. In the past, I've tried to set goals and set things up to where I would change a behavior or do something to better myself. And I do end up hitting that probably 2 weeks, 3 weeks after that fall off period. And it's very typical. I've seen it before with people both in the fitness realm and in other areas of their lives as well. But specifically in the fitness realm, it happens a lot because a lot of people will start off the new year saying, oh, I'm going to do this for myself. And 2 weeks later, they're not doing it. I like to refer to it as the Globo Gym Black Friday period. Yep. Because what they do is they get a bunch of new members to sign up the first of the year. And then those people don't show up 3-4 weeks later and they've got a whole year's worth of membership and people not using their equipment, wear and tear on their stuff. So I've been down that road. But the one thing about goal setting now, if I'm going to do something, I'm just going to do it right then and there. It doesn't matter what period of the year it is. I think that's made a difference, because if you wait to the beginning of the year to do it, then you put a lot of pressure on yourself to have a lot of results in a short amount of time. And usually that's not a good way to approach it. So I always make the same resolution every year, and that's not to make any resolutions. And I've kept that for the past 10 years. So, it's worked out well for me.
No, I can see that argument that using a specific start date, I can see that going two ways. In one way, giving yourself a specific start date for if it's something like quitting smoking or getting into a new fitness routine. Start dates can be helpful because they can help you kind of mentally prepare, okay, I'm going to do this. Maybe you'll cut down on your tobacco intake or start going for walks and stuff in preparation for that. But on the other hand, I do like your idea in that if you have a feeling that you want to make a new change in direction and you have that feeling in July, you probably shouldn't wait till January to put that into effect. So I think that's a pretty good point. But seeing that deadline does kind of, it's sort of a pop cultural thing. I don't know if it's just, the West or, if, new traditions is kind of always, new year traditions and resolutions are always kind of a global human thing. I'm not really sure, but I think that the first thing I want to talk about is what sort of goals are appropriate for that, because there's a lot of goals that you specifically things that are just centered around numbers, whether that's the weight on the bar that you want to lift or the weight on the scale that you want to get to, whether you want to move up a weight category or move down, whether you just want to start introducing some more cardiovascular health stuff into your fitness routine. Like quantifying those things, again, I feel like it's a double-edged sword, because you can say, yeah, I want to lose 30 pounds, but if you lost 25 pounds, are you going to be upset? You know, like, yeah. So you want to, well, I guess we can go with how to pick goals. Yeah. So
we were talking about when you do pick a goal, and if you're probably listening to this podcast, you're the type of person who's probably heard the acronym SMART before: specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, timely. And those all have to do with setting goals that are attainable, right? Within a certain amount of time, they're realistic, they're specific, and you can measure them. They're all things that you can quantify. And when goals aren't quantifiable, then, I mean, what separates it from just being the idea of wanting to improve something or get rid of a habit or do something better or put 50 kilos on your total or whatever. So you have to have, we measure our days and our existence in time. So we have to have a timeline, a start and a finish. And if you don't, then how do you hold yourself accountable to where you're at in that progression, in that timeline? So when we're talking about goal setting, there's two ways to approach it. There's a couple of people that have ideas that goals can be set low and then have multiple small goals set up so that you can have small successes along the way. And there's other sets of goals that aim for the stars, like aim way overshoot your goals. And if you fall short, then you're still hitting your goal. So I'll talk about the higher overshooting of the goal. And Grayson, if you want to take the lower like the lower end, like hitting the mark little by little.
Yeah, so the way I like to think about those kind of two different ways of going about approaching what you want is focusing on end state versus focusing on process. So an example of, you know, say you have a goal and you say, I want to lose 30 pounds to move down to this new weight category and just be a little bit fitter, or I don't feel good when I'm walking around. So that's your end goal. But if you just leave it at, I want to lose 30 pounds, sometimes that can be really daunting. Like, you'll end up doing too restrictive of a diet and burning your metabolism out and crashing within 2 or 3 weeks because you're just hungry, hungry, hungry all the time. Or you'll ramp your exercise up crazy amounts to try to burn off extra calories. And those are the sort of things that result in burnout. So a step that you can do is you can make, you know, process goals or aim low goals towards that end. So an example would be, if your goal is to lose weight, your first process goal is going to be clean out my fridge from the things that I know I shouldn't be eating, right? That's the first little thing you can do. Go and just clear it out and restock your fridge. So I'm going to go grocery shopping and not buy Oreos today. That's your first step of process goal. Then yeah. Once you can get down, like, okay, I'm buying the right foods, then it's, okay, I'm going to start making my lunches for work. Then you can say, okay, I'm going to start adding an extra day at the gym or tracking my calories more or planning my meal frequencies out. And you add complexity as you master the fundamentals. Because if, to use a weightlifting analogy, if the end goal is a 100 kilo snatch, but you don't have process goals of mastery at 80 kilos and 85 kilos and consistency at 90, then you might just be trying to snatch 100 over and over again, and it's going to feel like you're not making progress. Because the problem I see with setting the goal too high is that if it takes, you know, if that's a lofty goal, that might take you a very long time to get there. And if you don't have benchmarks and roadmarks along the way to show you that you're headed in that direction, then it can feel like you're spinning your wheels, when in reality, you're still getting much better. And I feel like a lot of times, especially athletes, but also just anybody trying to lose weight, they kind of lose the forest for the trees, where they say, okay, well, my lifts haven't really gone up as much as I'd like them to. And they might be just referring to their classic lifts in the total, but they don't see the how much more consistent they are at their 85 and 90%. They don't see the improvement in shoulder stability, where the first time you hit that weight, it was all over the place. And the second time, you didn't hit a new PR, but you made it look a lot better than the first time.
Right.
So keeping those little process goals, and like we've talked about a lot, you know, the idea of in lifting, focusing on mastery of the fundamentals and saying, am I more consistent? Do I have better positions? Even if the weight's not moving up, am I moving forward in the right direction? Is my flexibility improving? So it's essentially taking that end goal and saying, what little things do I need to be doing to make that happen? And then using those to build success as you move towards that long-term goal.
Yeah. And so for overshooting goals, there's this principle that there's a guy, his name is Grant Cardone. He wrote a book, and it's called the 10 times rule. And the 10 times rule basically says that if you put enough energy into something, or if you put an excessive amount of energy into something, you're going to hit your goal, even if you fall short, or if you have a setback, or if something comes up, you know, you've still exerted enough energy to complete that goal. And so when you, this is that shoot for the stars, like aim to land on Mercury instead of Mars, you know? So this is the big, take that huge leap type of goal setting. And when you want to learn something, like let's say you wanted to learn a new song on guitar, this is a good approach for that type of thing. This is the type of goal where you set and say, instead of learning a new song in 30 days, I'm going to learn that same song in 15 days and exert that same amount of effort that you would over a 30-day period in that consolidated 15-day period. So would this approach work for weightlifting? Maybe, maybe not. But let's say you wanted to improve a certain part of your snatch technique and saying, I want to be able to change my pull by the end of the month. Change this part of my pull. Let's say I'm not making contact at the right hip position. I'm going to use the blocks, and I'm going to use these 15 days to reinforce this movement. Every day for 15 days, I'm going to, as part of my warm-up or part of my workout, I'm going to implement this small exercise to increase my efficiency in my snatch movement. So if you consolidate that learning time, that could be a way to increase your technical ability in a shorter amount of time, and which could carry over to a larger snatch. So the thing about these types of goals is it really depends on what you want to do. Do you want to consolidate a diet change in 15 days? Probably not. Do you want to implement, like let's say I want to be able to add 20 kilos to my snatch in a 30-day period, when typically it would take like 12 weeks? Like, that's probably not going to work out. So the answer is it depends on what your goal is. If it's something that you want to learn, you can probably apply the higher, more effort principle. You can expend more energy on learning something than you can on mastering something in that short period of time. Mastery, unfortunately, it happens over a long period of time. So having small goals set up, like Grayson was talking about, those things will help lead to mastery over a long period of time. Usually people don't master things in a crunch.
Yeah.
Like if you've ever studied for anything, you're cramming for that exam, you're trying to get that you know report in, and you study as much as you can and pass the test, and then it's all gone. That's what that crunch is. It helps you learn, it helps you consolidate time, it helps you achieve something, but it's not good for long-term mastery, long-term retention of something, of a skill, like a diet plan or you know, a physical goal. So your approach to what your goal setting is going to depend on what it is you want to achieve.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that there is one good example that I've heard I think it was John Burroughs talk about that make your goals like for if you want to pursue like a amateur career in weightlifting and you really want to compete at the highest levels and be as good as you possibly can, I think that that's the kind of long-term goal that, I mean, with what he was saying, and I feel like I sort of agree with this, is if you make your goal to get to nationals, you may or may not make it to nationals. But if you make your goal to win nationals, even if you didn't win, you still got there, because right. that's a process now. It's not towards the goal, it's a step. So I've heard, I don't remember which athlete's talking about it, but they were saying, yeah, I mean, the goal is always, you know, get a medal at the Olympics. I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
And then that way, when you get to Nationals or American Open, and it's your first time there, you're not lifting like you've done it. You're lifting like you have more to do.
Right.
And I think that that sort of drive isn't necessarily applicable to everybody that does weightlifting, because a lot of us do weightlifting as a part of our fitness routine. It keeps us mobile. It keeps us strong. We want to keep, you know, working out. We like getting stronger. We like lifting weights. But maybe we're not planning on, you know, winning a medal at a Pan Americans. But for those people that are, aiming high is really good, because saying like, hey, I want to, you know, just place really well at an American Open series. It's like, no, if your goal is to get to American Open finals, then the series is a step along the way, and you might end up a little bit less nervous being there.
Yeah.
So I think that the lessons to be learned from these kind of two ideas of like, do you set like a big astronomical goal, or do you start small, is really just how ready are you to change? And that was a big thing that we talked about in my nutrition classes in college, was you have to meet people where they're at. And if you're eating a lot of junk food and eating a lot of sugar and not sleeping very well and not very physically active, and you say, okay, well, I'm going to help you with your goals. Your goal is to do a bodybuilding show at the end of the year, and we're going to do this radical exercise intervention and this radical diet and lifestyle intervention. The success of those things in keeping weight off or anything like that is really pretty low when you try to make wholesale changes all at once.
Yeah.
So maybe you can say, all right, well, like, this is our end goal. We want to get there. But let's remember that that's down the line. And your first goal should be, you got to make these things habits. So if you want to lift more weight, you have to, you know, look at what habits do you have that contribute to that, or what habits lead to a success in diet. And that could be doing your cool down stretches, or really, really thorough with your warm up, or really pushing it on your accessory exercises versus going through the motions.
Right.
Because I know that, you know, well, Mundo hopped in and did some workouts with Robin, and we had some high rep banded upright rows just to work on some upper back stability and tendon strength and just get a good pump workout in the end. And I'm sure that you felt like you could have made those as easy as you wanted and done all three sets of 25, but making it the habit of, no, whenever I'm doing hip extensions, tricep pushdowns, any of these little accessory things, I'm going to hit those as hard as I do my snatch. Those are the little habitual things. And I kind of like making goals around those habitual things, because it's getting the ball rolling. And then I feel like we've kind of talked about, you know, intermediate and beginner exercise programs and intermediate and beginner diets. And maybe there should be intermediate, beginner, and advanced goal setting.
Yeah, that's a good point.
If you've never set a goal and tried to accomplish something before, start small so that you win the first time.
Right.
You know, it you never want to start with, like, the first level of a video game is never so hard you can't get past it.
That's very true.
You have to get a hook in. You have to, like, be like, oh, I won that level, and that feels good.
Right.
Because what you end up doing with goal setting is the more times you accomplish it, the more capable you feel to accomplish the next one. So if you haven't done a lot of goal setting before, start small. Say, okay, I'm going to cook breakfast and dinner for myself every day, and I'm just going to do that for the first month. And if I get that down, then I'll meal prep lunch. And if I get that down, then I'll start really tracking my calories. And once I get that down, I can start playing with different ratios. So using those little goals to kind of build yourself towards where you want to end, mm-hmm. I think now someone who's more advanced and has maybe been training for a long time, dieting for a long time, or has just been motivated and sets lots of goals and really pushes themselves, they can probably set one of those higher echelon goals. Like, all right, I'm going to squat, you know, 200 for 5. And then they can say, okay, well, that's my goal, and I'm going to push hard for this amount of time and get that done and put in all of that effort. But I think taking somebody who's just trying to develop good exercise or eating habits and then intimidating them with a very large goal can be a little bit off. So I think that when you're going about setting your New Year's resolutions, you want to evaluate where you're at. Are you at a place where you can really do this abrupt thing and set this lofty goal? Or do you need to just kind of take it slow and be like, all right, I'm just going to be a little bit better every day and just chip away at these things as I go forward?
Yeah, I agree. I like the whole beginner and intermediate advanced thing. It's a very smart way to go about it. See what I did there?
We got jokes.
No, but to kind of touch back on some of the things that you were mentioning, the thing with John Bros, if you aim for those higher end competitions, right, that's not, I'm not going to say overshooting, but if you're shooting for that level of competition, the amount of effort that you're going to put in is going to get you to those competitions that are going to eventually lead you to going to those types of levels of you know, tournaments and weightlifting opportunities. So I like that idea. So the approaches that you can take are actually a combination of the two. So you can set small goals to lead you up to a bigger goal. So have the bigger goal in mind. Have something that you want to reach, like really aim for. If you aim really high and you expend enough effort on those small goals leading all the way up to it, you're going to get as close as possible to those things as if you just, you know, well, you'll get closer leading up the way by putting the amount of effort that you need to into those goals by overshooting as you would, you know, just setting yourself up for success along the way.
Yeah, I mean, I guess a way you could think about it is, you know, if you don't have your process goals in place and you don't have your stepping stones in place,
yeah,
you're essentially just trying to pole vault instead of climbing a ladder.
Right.
You're trying to hit the top rung right away, and as opposed to kind of building up rung by rung to get there. So I think that it's important to have that bigger goal in mind. And I think that with, especially in fitness related things, whether it's physical performance or body composition changes, the time part of the SMART goal is really important.
Yeah.
Because if you say that you want to radically change your body composition, but you don't recognize that that might take you a couple of years to get where you want to be, you're going to be disappointed. If you want to, you know, do your best, lift with the best, you have to recognize that that's a 5 to 10 yeah. year investment.
Right.
And you'll get better and better, but, you know, this is a sport that takes a long time to get really good at. Just like anything. Like, I'm sure if we took up table tennis, we wouldn't be able to go to nationals in a year.
Probably not.
You know?
Yeah.
I would be pretty... I'm not great at table tennis, but it's sort of like anything else, you know? And I think that with weightlifting, it's hard to take a step back from it and realize that if you thought about any other sport the way some people feel about weightlifting, where they're like, I've been coming in and I've been getting better, and then, you know, I'm going to get to this place really fast if I just keep making the same rate of progress. No one would ever think about playing basketball at a high level the same way.
Yeah.
You know, like they'd recognize that, you know, oh, anybody that's playing in the NBA started when they were a kid and then build their way up.
Right.
And weightlifting, because it's an individual sport and because the financing is so low, they're all normal, everyday people that are doing these things that you want to do. They're software developers, they're engineers, they're waiters, they're whatever.
Yeah,
you know, these are normal people. But you have to recognize that just because they are normal people working normal jobs, they've still invested a ton of time.
Yeah.
And using your process goals to arrange your life in a way that supports your training or your nutrition intervention. I mean, I guess when it really comes down to it, the most important goals you can set are lifestyle changes.
Right.
Like for me, a thing that I really want for next year and that I want to set some parameters for is I want to read a lot more books next year than I did this year.
Okay.
I really, really like it. I like reading, but when I'm tired and I don't have like a firm thing, it's very easy to just listen to the news and then like go to bed or watch some TV. And I think that, you know, so now I'm kind of processing, like, okay, well, how am I going to do that? And is it, you know, so I might have a goal of, okay, well, I'm going to read 20 books next year. And that can be your end goal. But I know myself, and I know that if I have something that's like far away, I'm a chronic procrastinator.
Yeah.
So if I don't have like a daily plan, or I'm going to put this much work into this every day. So maybe it's, you know, for the first month, I'm going to read, you know, 20 pages a day and just get through that and set like a count number there. And then once I've mastered that, maybe I can add extra to it. But I think that you can use those sort of goal settings for any number of things that you want to accomplish. And just recognizing like what amount of time you have to put in, and that it, well, I guess reading books isn't the greatest example, but with like weightlifting and body composition goals, it can be, you know, long periods of time.
Yeah.
And, you know, taking that time into account and using that as a way to measure your process goals.
So I had a huge setback in one of my goals. Actually, in probably my whole weightlifting, if you call it a career, I guess, I was trying to get up to 73, and I made it to 73, and I was trying to get up to maybe 75 as a training weight, and then something happened, and I got really sick, and I lost about 20 pounds of muscle, and now I'm on the road back to trying to recover from that, and up until last Monday, like, I hadn't touched a barbell in over a month, and I had a goal along with one of the other athletes in the gym. Her name is Deanna McGillivray, to hit a 200 kilo total in competition, and she got it at AO Finals, and it was phenomenal. And I am gonna have a long road to get even close to that. And the So for me, a goal that I had, it got completely crushed, and now I'm gonna have to work around or work through trying to get back to even trying to attempt that goal again. And so when you experience setbacks and things like that, and sometimes you don't reach what you had in mind for your goal, it's important to take a step back and look at why you set it in the first place. When you think about what you want to achieve and the amount of time that you have to achieve it in, it's important to ask yourself why you want to do that thing in the first place and the amount of effort and dedication that you're going to expend to get that accomplished. Because if you do experience a setback, you do experience a catastrophic obstacle, you know, how do you get yourself back on track? And it's through that process of, you know, setting those manageable process goals and then continuing to shoot for the stars again. So for me, let's say I want to compete in Masters Worlds in 2020 in Germany, and I'll train like I'm trying to get a podium spot for Masters Worlds. But if I even get close to the qualifying total, like, I'll be happy, because they raise the totals quite a bit. And based on the weight class that I want to compete in, it's going to be a long, hard road. But I think that the first part for me is just getting back into the gym and just putting work in again. And then it's been very discouraging to pick up a barbell and know that the warm-up that I used to do just with the barbell takes an extra amount of effort than it used to. And so when you experience setbacks and you experience things that kind of put a hindrance in what you originally intended, it's important to remember why you set that goal up in the first place. If you want to do a body composition change the way you diet, don't just call it a diet. Change the way you eat. You know, if you want to be a better lifter, then treat yourself like you're a better lifter. You know, go into the gym, treat your training session like the lifts matter. Put more heart and dedication into it, and be grateful for the opportunities that you have, because every day that you get to train, you get to train. Because there's some people that don't get to train. There's some people that got sick or they got injured and they can't train anymore. They're sidelined. And I mean, be grateful for the opportunities that you have to be able to continue to set goals, even if you do have a setback. So for me, for instance, I'm going to try to compete at Masters Nationals in Salt Lake City. So I'm setting up goals to reach that. And then, like I said, I want to compete in Germany in 2020 under the 73 kilo weight class. And I'm going to try to aim for a podium spot. Even if I don't, that's fine. At least I get there. And if I don't get there, then I gave it a hell of a shot. So that overshooting, you know, I'm going to train like I'm trying to win a podium spot. But realistically, you know, I'm at where I'm at. So when we touch back on some of the things like the elite weightlifters that go to the Olympics, right? How many Olympic spots are there for any given country? Roughly the average is maybe 6, if that.
If they haven't been
sanctioned. So 6 people out of a population of how many weightlifters? Let's say there's 1 million weightlifters in America, right? And you have 6 people going. That's a 0.006%.
Yeah.
Like, it's really small. And if you think about like NFL players and NBA players, how many people are there in America? Or actually, the NBA includes other countries as well. They draw from other countries. So you think about the global population, 7 billion people, and there's how many NBA players? The percentage is very small. Your likelihood, and I'm crushing some dreams here, the likelihood of you getting to the NBA is very, very, very small. Same thing with the NFL. So be realistic about where you're at, and shoot like you're trying to get to those levels of play. And if you fall short, you still accomplished great things. You still bettered yourself. You're a great athlete. You know, you're still an example for the people that train with you or you know, play the sport with you. And be realistic. Like, if you're a master's athlete, your chances of going to the Olympics, probably not that great compared to a 20-year-old who's hitting, you know, a 300-kilo clean and jerk in the same weight class. You know, so
I'd love to see a 300-kilo clean and jerk. That would be...
Yeah.
A substantial world record.
Yeah, so...
But no, I agree with you. I think that if you don't give yourself the opportunity to work as hard as you possibly can to get that thing that you want, you'll never know if you could have gotten it.
Right.
And you might not get it, but you'll have done your best.
Yeah.
And if you never really try for it, then, yeah, you're going to fall short if you're not really pushing towards that. And going back to your assessment of, you know, like, why are you setting the goals? I think that brings me to one kind of last, like, point here, is that you can't set goals for other people.
Right.
You can't want to look or behave a certain way so that somebody else will think differently of you, or to try to impress somebody, or, you know, to, like, position yourself in a way of like, oh, I want to be looked up to within this realm.
Right.
And like those sort of goals that aren't intrinsic, like they're based on other people, I don't know if that's the healthiest way to live, because I kind of, you shouldn't really care about what other people think about you.
Right.
Like, if you can, you know, make sure that, you know, if you want to go to nationals, make sure you're doing it because you want to do it, not because you want to impress somebody or, you know, but then
or
again,
not
I guess
disappoint somebody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, making sure that your goals are your goals and not, you know, like, have you ever seen that documentary movie, Trophy Kids?
No.
It's a Chris Bell thing, and it's
Chris Bell's great. I like Chris Bell.
And it's all these just, like, horrible parents, like, torturing their kids to play football and, like, do these crazy things, and they're just, like, so emotionally manipulative.
Yeah.
So, like, make sure that, you know, and weightlifting's lucky in that not a lot of people are forcing people to do it.
Yeah.
But, you know, make sure that, you know, the goal that you have for your diet or your lifestyle change or reading more or, you know, driving less, you know, maybe you want to recycle more or keep your house cleaner. Make sure that those goals are coming from you and that you're not changing the way that you organize things in your house to make your parents think that you have your stuff together, because then you're not going to accomplish that. Like, if you want, like, you can't set a goal for something somebody else wants you to do. You have to want to do it. Otherwise,
or you can, but then, I mean, it's messy.
It's just the perils of, you know, if you're always trying to meet other people's expectations, you're never really taking care of yourself. And the goal setting stuff should be about you as the individual. It shouldn't be about, you know, how you want to be viewed by everyone else, you know? So if your goal doesn't necessarily align with everybody's preconceived notions of what it means to be successful or be doing something that's worth your time, then we'd all just be working all the time at jobs that we don't like because they give us 401ks, and we wouldn't be doing the gym, you know?
Yeah.
Like, so, like, we have to have our goals, and we have to be doing them for us and not really caring what other people think is a worthwhile use of your time.
You know what's odd? I met somebody this past year that had, she was extrinsically motivated. So she relied on pleasing other people to make herself feel validated and like her goals were being met. And I thought that was very odd, because it's almost like you want people to put you on a pedestal to be an example for them. But what happens when you don't meet that expectation? And I thought that was a little strange, because I've always been intrinsically motivated. I've always thought, like, I'm going to do something because I want to do it, not because anybody else. Like, I don't care what my parents think. I will do whatever I want. And, like, I couldn't really understand that point of view. But I know some cultures have some part of their family unit or their cultural belief is that there is some extrinsic motivations for doing things.
It's like an honor system.
Honor system, sort of, but it's like, it's called high context, low context cultures. So, like, I think America is a very low context culture. Like, we pretty much say what we mean. It's like, hey, do we have a deal? Yes or no? We have a deal. Great. Everything's good. We're going to sign the paperwork. Some high context cultures will be like, oh, well, let's talk. Let's be friends. Let's, you know, have a communication over 6 months, feel out how, you know, each other does business and things like that. That's like a high context culture. So, like,
okay,
some people are extrinsically motivated in that aspect, to where it's like, well, I want to build a community and have a support system in the gym or have all these other things, and, like, if I don't do this, I'm not going to be part of that culture. I'm not going to be part of that community. And if I don't get to these goals, I'm going to feel like I disappointed these people. And that, like I said, I can't relate to that, because that's a dangerous place to be, because if you continually look outside for validation and people don't give it to you, that could be, like, very ego-inflicting, like, damage. It could be damaging to the self, you know, like, self-esteem, self-respect, and things like that. So I do understand that there are cultural differences in context, high context, low context differences, but For me, intrinsic motivation, what drives you as a person, as an individual? We're Americans, we think this way from the time that we're young. But I think when you have an intrinsic goal, you're going to end up doing things that are going to be better in the long run for everybody anyway, as long as they're not like completely tyrannical.
Yeah. And I think if you have, you know, those sort of ambitions, like, I can't say this is 100% rule, but like I'd be willing to bet that most amazing artists that are like world renowned didn't set out with the goal of I'm going to be a world renowned artist. They set out with the goal of I want to make art.
Yeah.
And you know, your first, you know, if that's lifting, it's I want to lift weights.
Yeah.
And as long as that's you wanting to lift weights, you can push towards those other things.
Right.
But if the end goal is I want to have the most followers and
yeah,
have everybody know who I am from lifting in the Olympics, that might be the wrong motivation to get there. For those days that you wake up and it's hard and you just like don't really want to do it all the time, that's kind of where you end up.
Yeah, no, that's true. All right, so that kind of wraps up what we had to talk about, goals, and I'll do a tiny recap of what we can help you with or going forward with that at the end of the show, but we wanted to throw out an idea real quick.
So we've got a kind of fun one today. So we're going to do a bit of a thought experiment, and we're going to try to work through what this would look like. So I was thinking about this the other day, and what would it mean if we all woke up tomorrow morning and suddenly anytime you made eye contact with someone, you could hear every unfiltered thought in their head? So this would mean everybody can read everybody's thoughts. Now, we talked about this in the lying episode, where we talked about, you know, whether white lies are acceptable. And this would essentially be forcing everyone into that radical honesty, where everyone knows exactly what you're thinking at all times. And I was just kind of wondering, like, would that just cause a total collapse of our society if we had unfiltered access to other people's thoughts? Because right now, our thoughts are private. So you, as long as you behave in a certain way, you can think whatever you want, as long as, you know, so some people might think bad things, but they don't act on them. You know, like if you're stuck behind someone in traffic, you might think about, you know, rear-ending them and driving them off the road because you're pissed.
Mm-hmm.
But as long as you don't act on that, that doesn't affect you as a person, right? Like, people, you aren't judged by that. But if, you know, I'm imagining like a situation where you go to a grocery store and you're checking out and the cashier looks at you and they say, oh yeah, how are you doing today? And you just hear, God damn, this person's ugly. And because those thoughts kind of pop up. Like, people have negative thoughts all the time.
Right.
Like, if you're annoyed with your significant other, you might think something mean that you'd never actually say. It just pops in your head because you're annoyed. But if everybody gets access to those things, what does that do to our society? What would that mean for our ability to interact with each other? And do you think it would increase hostility or violence?
Well, I think it would really depend on how it started. So let's say the first generation of people that learn to deal with this ability, there might be some fallout from that. It would be pretty bad. I think a lot of the time, the way we think and what we think is very different from what we say. Because we're taught, we did talk about this, like the lying and things that we say to people sometimes doesn't have the bite it would when we're thinking it. We're more tactful than that, or at least we grew up to learn to try to be more tactful than that. So having somebody's unfiltered thoughts streamed through your head, is like having your neighbor upstairs stream porn straight down into your TV and you not being able to do anything about it. Like, you would probably freak out. Like, I know I would freak out if I had probably heard some of the thoughts of the people around me. And because, like, even some of the things that I think, especially when you're driving around, it's like, man, did I just really think that? It's just like...
And I think that's
like Mortal Kombat fatality, like, yeah, type scenarios, like pulling people's, you know, heads off in traffic, popping them in the rear end with your semi truck, you know, type stuff, like running them off the road.
And our society is so based around the assumption that everybody is going to behave rationally,
right?
So whether you feel or think something that's a very emotional reaction, we trust that people's behavior is going to be rational. And essentially, everybody's emotional reactions to things would be broadcast. So we wouldn't have that layer of rationality on top. And now I could see this going in a couple of different directions, but would we pretend to not hear it, right? Would the best approach be to just ignore it? Yeah, we're still going to speak out loud, but we're going to, you know, try to block out whatever they're thinking. But then when you're having a conversation with somebody and you hear their thoughts and they're thinking about going fishing next weekend and they haven't heard a word that you said, you'll know that they're not listening to you right away, even if they're nodding and making eye contact. So I could see that creating a lot of problems there, where maybe people would just start being really reclusive and eliminating as much time with other people as possible. And it's, you interact for necessities, but like, I don't know how well like big communities would still work in that situation.
I think we would adapt to that ability. I think we would evolve our way of thinking and communicating with that. So either we might drop the actual speaking portion of communication and just communicate that through that telepathic means. And I think that people would learn to have a filtered thought or block their thoughts off, because I think it's possible. Because if you ever, I don't know, and maybe I've done this with meditation, right? But you learn to filter things, or you learn to like not hold on to thoughts. Even if you have them, they can still slip by very quickly. And you can learn to acknowledge something and then just let it pass by and not hold on to it. So I think you could essentially learn to have like a blank slate of a mind until you're not in contact with somebody.
I think it would force us to.
Yeah, because if you've ever... I like to read some fiction novels and stuff like that, and one of them is Aragorn. I don't know if you're familiar with Aragorn.
No,
it's a fantasy novel about a boy who ends up finding a dragon egg and he becomes like a dragon rider, right? But the dragon and the rider are linked telepathically. They can hear each other's thoughts. They can feel each other's emotions. They can see through each other's eyes at specific points, and they can even merge to where they're almost one person. But they can also open their thoughts to other people, like touch each other's minds in a way, using like magic or whatever. But the elves in the story have learned to not lie, but to be so placid in their body movements, in their thoughts, that it's very difficult to tell what they're actually thinking. And I think that's what we would eventually become. Like, we would become almost statuesque in our body language. We would be very placid in our thought processes and in the way we think, and we'd probably learn the ability to close our minds off in some way.
Yeah, I think that the idea of like kind of closing off, or, you know, we'd all essentially have to learn to quiet our minds from a very early age, because when not just impulsive words, but impulsive thoughts become the problem, So I could see this as like the first generation that was born from the moment they were born going forward could do this. I think that we would either develop techniques or standards as a society to train people to not think impulsively.
Right.
And it would be really interesting because you would essentially be forced to kind of have this like permanent reinforcement of having a positive mental attitude all the time, so that you're having to constantly generate good thoughts and, you know, like caring thoughts about other people.
Right.
And to try not to telegraph our kind of baser emotional instincts. But I think that the real question is, would this be a dystopia where what do we lose when we, in order to maintain the rationality and the function of a society, we have to not just downregulate our outward displays of emotion, but our inward feelings of them and the way that our frustration or anger is presented in our minds, where, you know, would people just end up having all emotionality driven out of them over a series of generations, where the emotional reaction to things is just so looked down on because it's just easily telegraphed? And I mean, how many times have you been throwing a temper tantrum in your head but acted normally because you don't want to be embarrassed?
Yeah, that's true.
What if you had to be embarrassed by those thoughts? You know, how many times have you, you know, held two conflicting ideas, one that you know is the absolute, you know, moral right answer, but two is an impulsive thing that you feel in the moment? Like, well, what do we lose when we lose our ability to keep things secret to ourselves?
Right. I don't know. That's a good question. Do you think we would probably lose the ability to be self-deceptive as well?
Yeah.
Because we wouldn't be able to tell ourselves something that wasn't true, or be ugly to ourselves, because those thoughts would automatically be broadcast to other people as well. And I think the other adaptation that might take place is that people would just get thick-skinned. It would just be part of it.
Yeah.
Like, you initially make contact, and it's like the drift in a movie. Have you ever seen Pacific Rim, where the two robot jocks, they just drift and their minds combine, and you see their memories and all that? It would be like that, so you'd know them. It'd be like a very personal interaction. But then beyond that, you separate again, and then you're able to communicate effectively. So you might get that initial burst of like, oh, whoa. You're like, yikes, he really does not keep his eyes up off my chest area. Or like, wow, he really thinks I have a nice butt. That's fantastic. but like, maybe like those things would be a form of, it would be the initial saying, hey, how's it going? It would just be that, like, and the initial response is good. Yeah, it would just be like, oh, hey, how you doing? How are you? I'm good. And that would just be the normal thing. And then you just go on communicating. You have that initial flood of whatever reaction or things that you're thinking about, and then you move on. Almost like a thick skin, like, oh, this initial thing isn't really...
It's not really
everything
personal.
You think. It's not everything you think. Yeah, it's not taken, like, super personal. Because, like, there's been times where, like, you'll look at a girl or you know, if you're looking at a guy on the other side, and be like, wow, she's beautiful, she's got, you know, this or that, you know, aspect, or he's got this, like, he's really handsome, he's this tall or whatever. But that's all you think. It's not like you're dwelling on it. So like, if your spouse all of a sudden looked over at you and you're thinking that, like, she wouldn't take it as a bad reaction. She'd be like, oh yeah, no, it's part of the deal.
That's what
part of
the deal.
Yeah, that's what brains do. Like, it would be a normal thing. So that would be the other adaptation to it.
What would be really interesting is to see what that would do to, you know, politics.
Ooh.
And business, where, yeah, like, what is a world where you can't deceive anyone look like? When you can't, you know, think one have, you know, have a private position and a public position. Like, what is that, like, what does that world look like? And I imagine that initially chaos for sure.
Yeah.
But, you know, would it be better in the long run once that first generation are adults and they've operated like this for their whole lives, do you think that we'd have a more honest political or business sector?
Yeah.
You know, like that would be really interesting to see kind of what sort of impacts that would have on, you know, companies merging, or when it's like, oh, we'll buy it for this, and then, but if they know, they're thinking what the actual value is, you can't inflate and negotiate. Right. The ability to barter and negotiate terms would go away because you know exactly what that person's position is and what they're willing to do right away just right. by looking at them.
Well, what if you have that high context, low context concept come into play, where it's just like a mobster mentality, where it's just like, hey, I'm not going to kill you, right? I'm not going to kill you. Hey, would you do me the favor of killing this guy over here? Like, so, like, I'm not lying. I'm not being deceptive, because I'm not going to kill you. I'm really not. But I didn't say he wasn't, right? So if I'm doing a business deal with you and I say, well, yeah, my company's doing great. You know, I am in charge of a successful section of the company. You're not really saying that the whole company is successful, or that you individually, like, are sure that the company as a whole is profitable or whatever. You're just saying that your portion of it, which is true, and in context, that's correct. But it could be deceptive by saying that as a whole, the company's not doing great, but my section is. So, like, my section of the company is doing fantastic. Our sales are up. You know, this is what we can offer you. But as a whole, under the umbrella of something else, like, this thing is going downhill fast, and we just want to get rid of our portion. We want to unload it and then have you take the rest of it with you.
Maybe
there could be some deception based on context.
On how much information you have. So maybe
information and context.
Maybe that we would be in a position where we hire third party negotiators and only give them pertinent information to the negotiation.
That could be.
So you bring in an outside person and say, hey, here are the numbers that we need you to know, go negotiate.
Right.
And so it's people without the complete picture, and you're having, so like, maybe there are ways that you could deceive.
Right.
Because if you bring somebody in and don't look at them and slide them a piece of paper so that they can't hear what you're thinking. But like, I don't know. It would certainly be a big change, because we really value our ability to have our privacy
right.
in our heads. And I think that the difference between growing up without that and having that abruptly taken from you, in the scenario where we all wake up and can do that, would probably produce really drastically different.
Yeah. Do you think it's Orwellian-esque? Like from 1984?
I mean, it would almost be going past that.
It's a step beyond that.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess it would make thought policing could be a thing, because it's like, well, yeah. If you're having, you know, because right now, you know, we have a right to free speech, but we don't have a right to, you know, incite a riot
right.
or
yeah.
anything like that. So, but you're allowed to think about inciting a riot. You're allowed to think about shouting fire in a movie theater.
Right.
But you're not allowed to. But if you got to a point where you weren't allowed to think about shouting fire in the movie theater just because thinking it causes the panic,
right.
then you would actually have to start, like, controlling for dangerous thoughts. And that strikes me as dystopian and
that's
Orwellian.
Very, yeah, that's kind of Orwellian, I agree. All right, so there's quite a bit to think about in there. But to recap, for goal setting, there's the high and low portions of goals. Aim for the stars, put in the effort, and you'll reach, you know, further than you thought. Set low process goals to get the steps leading up to milestones that'll help you reach those higher end goals. And then be smart about what you want. Ask yourself why you want it and set goals appropriately for what you want to achieve and where you're at in those processes. And as far as thinking goes,
I mean, start your meditation practice now in case we all wake up telepathic tomorrow.
Yeah,
start controlling that stuff. Cultivate that PMA.
All right, Grayson, you want to add anything else?
No, I think that'll do it this week. Have a good week, guys, and we'll catch you next time.
All right, y'all. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas. Whatever else you celebrate, happy solstice. Happy lifting, y'all.